Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
We pause to remember Pearl Harbor this Sunday night at the Lighthouse and consider its implications today and what ways it corresponds to 9/11 and so on. The concept of a just war and the role of war in God's sovereign rule over the earth. And you are invited at 6 p.m. this Sunday night. Folks, it's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Red Friday, wearing red in honor of our soldiers. Hey, I understand that Al-Qaeda has called for lone wolf attacks on our vets, and the DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, has advised us all to duck and cover. Yeah, DHS is telling our vets to lower their profile, hide their insignia, play like a mole, and go into hiding, you know, to remove anything that might identify them as a target for the ISIS lone wolf jihadist. The Iraqi Prime Minister on Thursday informed us he has intel that ISIS is planning an attack on subways in America and in Paris. Back in September, remember, Alan West informed us of increased threats coming from ISIS against America. I guess they didn't get the memo from Obama's office that they're not a threat to America. He said, quote, a law enforcement bulletin obtained by FoxNews.com warned that Islamic State fighters have increased calls for lone wolves to attack U.S. soldiers in America in recent months, citing one tweet that called for jihadists to find service members' addresses online and then show up and slaughter them. Yeah, and DHS expects these guys to go to cower, to hide? Have you seen the response to this all over the internet? Vets are saying, in effect, bring it on, you know? Here you go.
The people of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation.
Look, we get it. We are at war with Islamist State. We get it. We are at war with Al-Qaeda. It's just too bad our president doesn't seem to get it. You know, and we don't do the cowering thingy very well. You know what I mean? I mean, real Americans don't. Guys like Obama and company cower, crawfish, equivocate. But not real Americans. You know, it took FDR about an hour to go to the airwaves after Pearl Harbor. I believe the attack ended at something about 10 a.m. Pacific time. And that's what, 1 p.m. Eastern time. So FDR was on the air by 1:30, I understand. But last month, it took Obama's administration 48 hours to ponder over a Pentagon-approved plan to rescue Luke Somers in Yemen. And so that mission failed because by the time it was executed, Al-Qaeda got wind of it and moved Somers. Did you know that Obama waits until he has consensus from his political advisors before he acts on intel like this? You know, Obama canceled an operation to kill Osama on, what, three different occasions before finally approving the May 2nd Navy SEAL mission. And that, my friends, was after a 16-hour delay. He delayed initiating a rescue mission for James Foley for 30 days. And we know how that ended up. You know, he spent that time fretting over his image, I understand. Yeah, while, of course, playing golf. I understand that he was worried that he would be carterized if the mission failed. James Foley was beheaded by Islamist terrorists, aided and abetted by the Obama administration's hesitancy to act. But, you know, it's interesting, when it came time to make it a deal with terrorists that involved releasing 16 known terrorists held at Gitmo in exchange for one traitor, Bergdahl, then Obama said it was necessary to act quickly and decisively, and that's why he couldn't pass it by Congress first, like he's supposed to, according to law. And, of course, the then spineless Congress let him get away with it. Let's see now. I'm trying to figure this out. It takes 48 hours to ponder a Pentagon-approved plan to rescue an American held hostage by ISIS, but it takes no time at all to release known terrorists in exchange for a suspected traitor. This is so bizarre. You know, folks, if it walks like a traitor and talks like a traitor, it might be. It's just interesting to me what Obama will act on and what he equivocates about. The things he does not need to ponder or fact-check or study or deliberate. You know, as opposed to those things that he considers requires lengthy deliberation and serious study and contemplation before he acts. For example, when it comes to the riots in Ferguson, there's no need to ponder the merits of the case, no need to consider facts such as, you know, that Brown attacked the officer in question. He's free to immediately speak to those sorts of issues, without study, without concern that he has all the facts, which seems to be consistent with him in matters like these. Remember Trayvon. Obama was quick to jump out in front of the cameras and take point on throwing fuel on that fire, stirring up racial issues, throwing fuel on the fire that the likes of that charlatan Sharpton were trying to ignite over that whole issue when it really had nothing to do with race at all. Or when Professor Gates was arrested for refusing to identify himself to police and Obama turned it into a soapbox to preach his racial unrest message to the nation. In these situations, Obama, you know, didn't need to deliberate, to carefully choose his words, to consider the implications of his actions. In each of these cases, his words were incendiary. They fomented discontent, they encouraged unrest and troubled America. But none of that mattered. He was ready to jump on those things right away. When it comes to approving, however, a Pentagon vetted and approved plan to rescue an American held hostage by terrorists. Well, now that requires some study, some deliberation, some careful analysis. That is, except when it comes to releasing known terrorists in exchange for a suspected traitor. Well, then and that's a whole different case altogether. Does anyone wonder why so many of us are confused about the loyalties of the president-alleged? Wasn't it refreshing back in the day when we had presidents whose loyalty to the United States was unquestioned?
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Remember that? He said that privately, by the way. He said it as a joke, not realizing he was on mic. Now, here's a little private moment between Obama and then Russian President Medvedev with a personal message through Medvedev to Vladimir Putin. In a moment, an unguarded moment when he wasn't aware the mics were on.
My last election, yeah. After my election, I have more flexibility. Yeah.
Of course, you should know that Obama's statement was not a joke. He really meant it. He wanted to send a message to Vladimir Putin that after his election, he would have more flexibility to betray the American people to the interests of Russia. No doubt Putin saw that clip and saw what a weasel Obama is, and no wonder he has no respect for him. Now, what Reagan would say in the open, let's remember these days with me for a moment. Reagan at the Brandenburg Gate back in 1987.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Kind of brings a tear of nostalgia, doesn't it? Want to hear the full statement Reagan made at the Brandenburg Gate back in 1987? All right, here you go.
Today I say, as long as this gate is closed, as long as this scar of a wall is permitted to stand, it is not the German question alone that remains open, but the question of freedom for all mankind. In the 1950s, Khrushchev predicted, "We will bury you." But in the West today, we see a free world that has achieved a level of prosperity and well-being unprecedented in all human history. In the communist world, we see failure. There is one sign the Soviets can make that would be unmistakable, that would advance dramatically the cause of freedom and peace. General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Remember when presidents talk like this? And now we have a president who, when he learns that terrorists are attacking our embassy in Benghazi, goes to bed. Next day, instructs his team to say the movie made him do it. Told a bald-faced lie, and he knew it. Spineless Congress lets him get away with it. And a deluded electorate votes him in again because of the color of his skin. That's what it's all about. They can't bring themselves to oppose this man or to stand up to him. And it's all because of the color of his skin. But that, my friend, is wearing thin. How long are you going to let liberals play the race card as a Trump card? I mean, no, really, more like an ace up their sleeve type of thing, like a card cheat. Because it's a cheater card, friend. America should be praised for taking a stand against slavery, for fighting a war to end it. As for prejudice, America should be honored and praised for the stand it has taken in its laws to address the issues of prejudice. But what about black prejudice against whites? Friends, prejudice is wrong in any color. And I think it very sad that our first black president had to be such a miserable failure. Really, it disheartens me. So what's next now? Our first woman president coming up here? Will Hillary run and win the White House? Great. From Obama to Hillary, who recently said, by the way, that we need to, quote, understand our enemies, you know, and to, quote, show them respect and, quote, empathize with our enemies insofar as we're able. Yeah, listen to it for yourself.
This is what we call smart power, using every possible tool and partner to advance peace and security, leaving no one on the sidelines, showing respect even for one's enemies, trying to understand and insofar as psychologically possible, empathize with their perspective and point of view.
Now, Fox News Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North was asked for his response to this, and here's what he said.
Colonel Oliver North joins us.
Those words coming out of someone who intends to become commander-in-chief are not just naive and utopian, it's irrational. Think about December 7th, 1941, and then FDR going to the Congress of the United States the next day saying...
I agree with Oliver. He was interrupted there, but I agree with Oliver that indeed, imagine FDR after Pearl Harbor or Bush after 9/11 saying something like this.
Showing respect even for one's enemies, trying to understand and insofar as psychologically possible, empathize with their perspective and point of view.
But is she right? After all, Jesus said, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, Matthew 5:44. Now, friends, it's time for a break, so I'm going to be addressing this when I get back. But the short of it is this. I suppose that's what Jesus expected us to do with the sword he told us we should procure in his absence. Then said he unto them, but now he that hath a purse, let him take it. And likewise his scrip, and he that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. End quote. Luke 22:36. I guess Jesus wanted us to get a sword, what, in order to love our enemies with it? All right, this is something to think about. I'll be right back.
Join us every Sunday in December as Pastor Scheidbach presents a series of messages titled The Questions of Christmas. December 7, the silent years between Jesus' birth and his presentation to the temple at 12, and from then to his baptism at about 30 years of age. The Message of the Silent Years, December 7. Services begin at 10:45 a.m. at the Lighthouse.
Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. And Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. In the last segment, let's remember Pearl Harbor for a moment.
With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God.
Hillary recently said that the 21st century response to our enemies is to, quote, understand them, end quote, to, quote, respect them, end quote, and to, quote, empathize with them, end quote. Here it is.
Showing respect even for one's enemies, trying to understand and insofar as psychologically possible, empathize with their perspective and point of view.
And Oliver North was asked to respond to this nonsense, and I pieced together a clip of that response. Here it is.
Those words coming out of someone who intends to become commander-in-chief are not just naive and utopian. It's irrational. Think about December 7th, 1941, and then FDR going to the Congress of the United States the next day saying...
Now, he was interrupted right here with a good point, and that is that we don't have to go back to FDR's response to Pearl Harbor for an example of how ridiculous this is. And she went on to mention the recent beheading of Foley as an example, another outrageous coming from Islamist terrorists. But there are a lot of mushy-headed Christians out there who actually think that Hillary represents a Christian perspective on this issue of how to treat our enemies, right? Now, this is a huge problem because many of these people vote. Oh, yeah, and many of them vote in people like Obama and Hillary. When Jesus said, love your enemies, did he mean we should respond to the threat of groups like Al-Qaeda or ISIS or whatever this becomes when they unite, which is what they're trying to do right now? Did Jesus mean we should seek to understand them, to empathize with them, and to respect them? Is that a Christian response to national security threats? Is that the reason it takes Obama so long to respond to ISIS threats? Is it because he's laboring first to empathize with them, to understand them, to make certain his actions show respect for them? Now, folks, this sounds like a policy of comforting our enemies, and that used to be considered treason. Is it possible that the leadership in this country are framing a philosophy that will shape future policies into virtual acts of treason? A policy of accommodating the enemies of our national security, of comforting them, of aiding and abetting them. Through what? Trying to understand them or respect them and empathize with them. Think about this. And I'll address it thoroughly Sunday night at 6 p.m. But consider, is this a Christian response? After all, Jesus did say, love your enemies. You know, it's just like liberals to distort something like this into service for the enemy of our souls and the enemy of our nation. Liberals cannot see that love and judgment are compatible. That is, you can't love someone and then turn around and destroy them, okay? Given certain circumstances. This is so bizarre. For example, these liberals will talk about mercy killing of the innocent, and Obama will build death panels into his Obamacare program because of a rationalization that these people should be killed in certain circumstances or let die. You know, and babies that survive an abortion should likewise be killed, according to Obama. So with these people, the innocent lives can be taken as an act of a kind of perverse sort of love. But murderers and rapists and child molesters and Islamic terrorists who behead innocent people, well, they need to be understood. They need to be respected. We need to empathize with them. But, you know, the life of a baby that survived a botched abortion, no respect for that life. No empathy for that little life, that little baby struggling for its life. No. But a murdering jihadist? Well, now, there's a life we ought to have respect for. And ought to pause to understand and empathize with. These people are so far gone into darkness and evil, it's scary. It's that weird, calm, smiling kind of evil that is so disturbing to the soul that has gripped the hearts and souls of these people. It's something I pointed out before, by the way. Killing, you see, is something that humans are going to do with respect to the issue of justice. That's right. And in the liberal world, well, killing will be used to eliminate unwanted babies and unwanted used-up old people who are a burden to the state healthcare system or upon the lives of their families. You see, whereas conservatives will use killing to rid society of murderers and rapists and jihad-headed terrorists, we will empathize with the baby struggling for its life. We will empathize and identify with that older generation clinging to their lives. They will view these as deserving of death if they are an inconvenience. But then they'll tell us that we're supposed to have sympathy and empathy and respect for those who are determined to destroy us and our families. What is wrong with these people? Let me back up a little bit on something I've discussed some time back. Ridicule, for example, is a human response to the ridiculous. In some cases, many cases, ridicule is the only proper response to the ridiculous. And ridicule is going to be part of societal interactions. Either we will ridicule the way of the wicked, the evil, the wretched, moral, abject derelicts of society, or we will ridicule sweet young ladies who have vowed to remain chaste for marriage. Human beings are going to ridicule what they consider ridiculous. So the question becomes, what will we hold up to the scorn of society? Will it be people who are so perverted they exchange the natural use of their bodies as God designed them for perversities like homosexuality, bestiality, pedophilia, and all this other weird stuff? Or are we going to hold up for scorn those who consider these behaviors to be aberrant and perverse? Can it be one or the other? Everything the social liberal accuses against the social conservative in terms of prejudiced behavior, scornful behavior, and so on, and ridicule, it's done by them in spades against us. And it's okay because, you see, those are the tools for maintaining certain social norms and mores that have been in place since the fall of man. What's happening, however, is that we have come to call evil good and good evil. So these social devices for establishing and maintaining social mores, you know, such as scorn for aberrant behavior and ridicule of unacceptable behavior, well, these are now turned against the good on behalf of the evil. They started by making you feel guilty about scorning and ridiculing their evil behavior. And once they succeeded at doing that and you backed off, then they turned scorn and ridicule against you for your moral position. Are you paying attention? Well, now they are reversing other natural behaviors. For example, they're turning the power to kill, which God gave to man in order to enforce laws against murder. And they want to use it to establish and maintain a new societal order, an order in which the innocent are killed as inconveniences to society or as impediments to progress. And the murderers and the rapists and the jihad-headed terrorists are to be understood and respected and empathized with. What did Jesus mean when he said we are to love our enemies? Did he mean we are to seek to understand them, to respect them, and to empathize with them? Let's look at this for a moment. God so loved the world, right? And we are celebrating this during the Christmas season. The truth that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life, John 3:16. And he gave his Son to die for our sins so we could be saved. That sounds loving to me. So God loves all mankind, right? Because the Bible says, for Christ died not for our sins only, but for the sins of the entire world or the whole world. And yet the same God who gave his only Son to save the world is going to judge that world and ultimately destroy it and all of rebellious mankind on it with fire. He's going to say, depart from me, ye cursed, into the lake of everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels, Matthew 25:41. So God, our Creator, can love us and nevertheless cast us into hell if we refuse to bow the knee willingly to his Son. God is not going to say, well, let's attempt to understand these wicked who have rejected my Son. Let's empathize with them. Let's respect them. No. He's going to say, depart from me, ye cursed, into the lake of everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. I can't take time to go into it now, but I would direct you to my website and go to the resources menu, and you'll see a drop down and select sermons or sermon media. And then when you're in there, download and listen to the message, What is Man? That message will change your perspective on that awful day when God declares, depart from me, you cursed, and you'll never see it the same way. Now, the Son of God, Jesus, said, love your enemies. Yet it is this same Son of God, Jesus, who will return to the earth with the sword of judgment coming from his mouth, Revelation 19, to destroy all of the wicked on the earth. Therefore, we know that love your enemies does not mean you cannot judge your enemies or destroy them if they are attempting to destroy you. Loving our enemies certainly requires us to seek to live at peace with all men, so that as much as lieth in you, be at peace with all men, as the Bible exhorts us in Romans 12. But alas, as saith the psalmist, quote, I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war. Psalm 120, verse 7. Of course, we love all men, but if one of those we love sets about to murder us or our children, well, then we're going to take them out, man, in a heartbeat. The only thing I need to understand about them is that they are set on killing my children. The only thing I need to respect about them is their power to do so, motivating me to make certain I have the means to defend myself. The only thing I need to empathize with are the lives of my children and my family, so that I don't hesitate one millisecond to deprive his family and his loved ones of their father before he deprives my family of theirs. You understand what I'm saying? That's it. And that's what the sword is for that Jesus told us to procure in his absence. It is to make certain some wicked person does not deprive my son of his father or my wife of her husband, because that's where my empathy lies, not with him who's attempting to kill me, but with those I'm obliged to protect. Any politician who tells me they are going to empathize with those who are attempting to destroy us, to take away our liberties, to deprive us of life, man, they're wrong-headed and they've got their heart in the wrong place. And they're crazy if they think they're going to get my vote. I hope you understand this. If you set your heart to empathize with those who are trying to destroy you and your family, you must then transfer empathy from those you are charged to protect in order to give it to those who are trying to kill them. You can't maintain equal empathy for both. It won't work. When your family or nation is under attack, you cannot afford one minute portion of empathy for that enemy. It all belongs to your charge. Loving your enemy does not mean understanding with anything like empathy their desire to kill you or your family. Romans 13, 1 through 6 outlines the ordaining purpose of civil government. In that passage, God has ordained that civil government bear the sword of judgment. The sword of judgment clearly refers to the fact that the government has the power of death to enforce law, certain laws. What did the divine judge of all the earth decree is the purpose for the ordaining of government in the use of the sword that he gave them? Well, he said it was to execute wrath against evildoers. Now, since it is God who ordained the power, it is God's prerogative to define who are the evildoers. In other words, God did not ordain government to use the sword to purge the Cambodian people in order to make way for the communist government. God did not ordain the killing fields, but liberal and godless politics did. God did not ordain government to use the sword to wipe out millions of Rwanda, but liberals and godless politics did. God did not ordain Iran to use their sword to wipe out the Jewish people and to drive them from their land into the sea. But Obama's liberal policies aid and abet Iran in that mission. Obama is contemplating placing sanctions on Israel. Did you hear about that? Because she's building homes in Jerusalem, of all places? And that because doing so irritates those who have declared openly their intention to drive Israel into the sea. No sanctions against the so-called Palestinians, though. Oh, no, of course not. Why? Well, because we need to understand and respect them and empathize with them. Not with Israel, mind you. No need to respect Israel. No need to understand Israel. No need to empathize with them. Why? Well, I guess because Israel's our friend. And we're supposed to love our enemies, not our friends. What is this nonsense? Oh, we don't empathize with our friends because we're empathizing with our enemies instead? I hope you're listening. I'm saying a whole lot more than I have time to lay out in so many words. You've got to get this. You see, this perversity is pervading all of our politics in this country. In Ferguson, for example, we're supposed to empathize, we're supposed to understand, and we're supposed to respect the so-called black angst against the whites that motivates kids like Brown to attack a police officer. And then for the people in that area, actually coming from outside the area, the Black Panthers and that crowd, coming and agitating riots. We're supposed to empathize and understand all of that and have respect for it? Yeah, right. We're supposed to empathize with the hoodlum who attacked the officer. But there's no empathy for the officer. Have you noticed? No one's calling for empathy for the officer. We're to understand the hoodlum, but no one's calling for anybody to understand the officer. We are to respect the hoodlum, but no one's calling for the respect for the officer or for the rule of law, for that matter. Are you paying attention? Hillary's nonsensical statement is a perfect representation of just about everything that's wrong in America today. Misplaced loyalties, misdirected sympathies, it's a big mess. We are transferring our proper sympathies from the righteous to the wicked, from the good to the evil, from the peace-loving to the riotous and warmongering jihad-headed Islamofascists or rioters in Ferguson. But no one is calling on any of them to understand, to empathize, or to respect those of us who don't riot in the streets whenever we think something's gone awry in the justice system. Libthink is backwards. It's inside out, it's upside down, it's twisted into so many distortions they can't think straight. Har har. There's a relationship to all these things. Their ways are crooked. It means distorted. They are froward in their paths. It means it's perverse. Proverbs 2:15. So on this Pearl Harbor Remembrance weekend, let's pause and consider how far from that generation we have come. If we had Obama in office back then, would we have been able to defend our liberties? I hope you'll come and join me Sunday morning at 9:30 a.m. for our Bible study time, at 10:45 for the preaching hour, and then at 6 p.m. in the evening for a preaching service. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
Christmas Eve service, Wednesday, December 24, 7 p.m. at the Lighthouse. Wonderful Christmas music, a reading of the Christmas story, and an opportunity to present a gift to Christ, the newborn King, at Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedaravia in Santa Maria.